Word of mouth. This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. Coming up, whoa, Canada. Our northern neighbors launch a campaign to rebrand the country as mighty wealthy and not so polite. Also, have you hugged your robot today? A curious consequence of the growing number of responsive human-like robots, humans fall in love with them. And witnessing the cycle of life with a philosophical pig farmer. But first, a war unfolding in New Hampshire from 1861 to 65. The American Civil War is often taught as a history of crucial battles led by valiant generals, a colossal death toll, and residual resentment in the American South. The generation that lived and died in that war tells another story which often began and ended far from the bloody fields where so many died. Concord Monitor editor emeritus Mike Pride combed through diaries, letters, and newspaper archives to piece together a bottom-up history of how the war was experienced by New Hampshire soldiers and the people they left behind. Mike's new book compiles 50 stories that open a window for today's readers into how ordinary people dealt with a violent and defining chapter of American history. The new book is called Our War, Days and Events in the Fight for the Union. And welcome, Mike Pride. So glad you could join us.
Well, thank you, Virginia. Glad to be here.
33,000 New Hampshire men, a tenth of the population, went to war. How many came back?
Well, that's kind of hard to say, but I 5,000 were killed. 10,000 came back with terrible injuries or with terrible sicknesses. And, of course, there was some migration to other states after the war. So, I mean, I think it's safe to say that 20,000 came back, but some of them were very, very badly damaged.
A tenth of the population, though, that's a great portion. How did New Hampshire citizens respond to this war from those first shots fired at Fort Sumter in April of 1861?
Well, in the beginning, they were very kind of accepting of the war. I mean, they thought that a war was coming, so they were worried about that. But at the same time, they expected to win it very quickly and that the volunteers came forward with great enthusiasm for the war and thought they would just go down south, fight one battle, come home, and the war would be over. So there was that giddiness that sometimes happens at the beginning of a war. Happened here.
And of course, the shift after four bloody years. You went through, as we mentioned, official accounts, historic archives, but found a number of personal letters and diaries. What does that add to your extensive knowledge of the Civil War, reading these letters and accounts?
It's one of the greatest experiences I think that a historian can have. I've been doing it for years and years from an earlier book that I wrote, but also just continue to go to archives and look at things. And one of the great things that happened after I finished my last book was that many people who were descendants of Civil War soldiers contacted me because of that book and shared the letters that they had kept in their families. So that was, you know, to me, that was the most fun because I was seeing things that no historian had ever used before.
It's quite remarkable because, you know, they're articulating what's going on for them, sharing their experience back at home. And of course, this is not just the soldiers, but civilians. What do we learn about the lives of the men and women left behind?
Well, about the men and women left behind, is for the women in particular, I think that's, you know, they're one of the parts of the war that's kind of left out in many accounts is women. I mean, there are some women who went into the service, and you read about that in history books that focus just on that. But to me, that's really an anomaly. Most of the women stayed home, and you said a tenth of the population served in the war from New Hampshire, and of course that's true. That was all the men, mm-hmm. all the farmers, the breadwinners, you know, and there was a fairly, at that time, traditional family structure in which the woman's role was very different. Women couldn't vote. Women couldn't, you know, participate in politics in a meaningful way, for the most part. I mean, there were women who did. But what happened was that the women took on the roles that the men had. And so, you know, you see in the letters where soldiers will write home, you know, I want you to sell that sled or sleigh now and make a little, you know, get the money. And it's kind of direct home activities from the field. And it really doesn't work out. Over time, they kind of lose touch with that, and the women take on those roles, and they're running the households in a way that and doing things that the men used to do. Mm-hmm. The most interesting of those is to me, is when a new child is being born. A soldier comes home on leave, and 9 months later, there's a baby. And the husband starts writing home what he wants the name of the baby to be, and it's clear from the letters that the wife has a different idea. And so there, you know, it's, there's the roles are really changing a lot. I think changed a lot by the war.
Wow, it's fascinating. And one of the other fascinating stories is this young couple. They were married in 1862 at the Cheshire Fairgrounds, where
right.
the 6th Regiment was preparing for war. Kate and John Cummings. First, a little background on them.
Well, Kate was 19 or 20 years old, 18, I don't remember exactly the age, but a very, very young woman. John went into the service as an officer, a young officer, was quickly promoted. But, you know, that regiment came together in Keene. They were from Peterborough, New Hampshire, the Cummingses. Her maiden name had been Scott, and the right near the end of their time, in December of 1861, right near the end of their time in Keene, they married with the regiment all looking on. And before that, there had been a big banquet in which she had baked a pie, and his name was cut into the crust of the pie. So,
I guess that was courtship.
Yes.
But you know what happened to them? Kate and Julia Dort, she's the major's wife, went to visit their husbands at the Baltimore Depot, but the regiment was actually away, and it's just excruciating. Their ships literally pass each other.
Oh, it is unbelievable.
On the Chesapeake Bay. He wrote how maddening it was to see her. But what happened next? Quite a tragedy.
It was quite a tragedy. They were actually with six soldiers from the 6th New Hampshire who had stayed behind in a hospital in Newport News, Virginia. And the colonel of the regiment, or lieutenant colonel, a man by the name of Scott, Charles Scott, was left to figure out how to get them all back up the river and up the Chesapeake Bay and the Potomac River and to rejoin the regiment. They got on a steamer, a sidewheel steamer, and they started up the river, and they were approached by another large ship, a transport on the Potomac River. And the captain swung to the left when he should have swung to the right, and ran right into the ship. The ship sank, and there was a terrible calamity aboard the ship, and the three women drowned, mm-hmm. The wives of three soldiers, including Colonel Scott's wife.
And Colonel Scott appealed to Lincoln himself to bring back her body. Bodies were washing ashore in Virginia.
They were actually 71... people drowned. It was three women, Arthur Dort, the son of the woman from Keene, and then the rest were all soldiers, including 11 men from the 6th New Hampshire. So it was a kind of a tragedy all across the state, but everyone focused on the women. And Colonel Scott first went to Washington to take part in the inquiry into what had happened, why the ships had collided. But while he was there, he found out that his wife's body had been found and been buried in Virginia. It was summertime, and so they were buried quickly to keep the bodies from decomposing. And he wanted to go and bring his wife's body home. He went to Secretary of War Stanton, who refused him permission to do so. It was fighting season. The Second Battle of Bull Run was about to be fought. Stanton was a busy man. There were reasons not to send soldiers into Virginia. But Scott wasn't satisfied with that. And I believe he was accompanied by a man from Concord by the name of John R. French. And together they went to Abraham Lincoln himself at the summer cottage where Lincoln sometimes stayed when it was really hot. And Lincoln was first became quite testy and said, "Am I to have no rest?" and tried to send them back to Stanton. And then in the end just sent them away and said no. And then he relented. He slept on it, and the next morning he woke up and decided that he was going to help Charles Scott go to retrieve his wife. He realized that he had been a little bit just testy and overextended by his duties.
Mike Pride's with us. That's just one of 50 stories that human, you know, there's more than 50. Of course, it's letters in between people, husbands, wives, brothers, sisters, sons, all involved in a book called Our War, which tells the story of the Civil War from a New Hampshire perspective. Mike's been a Civil War buff since his teenage years, and he has a new book out called Our War. Well, okay, so you mentioned, you know, like as the war went on, a real shift, of course, in how the war was characterized, for one thing, and why it was even fought. Any of the stories reflect these?
Yes. I wrote one of the chapters I wrote was about the Emancipation Proclamation. That was one of the chapters, just kind of showing all the attitudes and how those were changing, and how, in the cases of many of the men, when the proclamation went into effect and they realized that they were fighting to free the slaves, they basically, their attitude was to write home and say, if anybody down there really wants to come and take my place and fight for that cause, send them out here, because I have no interest in that. That's not why I went to war. But, you know, the attitude that begins to grow up in early 1863 within the Union Army, a lot of people hold to the views that they always had. But there's also several letters that I found where people kind of took a middling view, where they said, if that's going to help end the war faster, I'm for it. Mm-hmm. And then there's one soldier whose letters I found at the New Hampshire Historical Society by the name of Lucien Smith, mm-hmm. who was in the 4th New Hampshire Regiment. And at the beginning of the war, he's writing letters home. They're stationed in the Sea Islands of South Carolina, and there are a lot of freed slaves. In fact, the only people that they see, basically, other than other soldiers, are these slaves that have been left behind who worked on the cotton plantations there. And he immediately, like a lot of the other soldiers, begins to try to figure out ways to take advantage of the freed slaves that he finds there, called contrabands. And he writes letters home to his brother saying, why don't you come on out here? We can set up something where we can steal this from the blacks, or we can steal this from the blacks, or we can take advantage of them in this way. But then sometime in June of 1863, he writes a letter to his sister, I believe, in which she's taunted him about, while you're out there, all the pretty girls back home are marrying the men who stayed behind. Don't you wish you were here? And he writes back and he says, No. I'm very invested in this cause. I'm here for the same reasons that I came out in the first place, and we need to win this war. And he goes on to say that now that they are blacks are entering the army in black regiments called colored troops, he is willing to fight by their sides to bring an end to slavery, because if they're willing to fight for their freedom, he thinks it's the right thing to do. So it's really kind of a remarkable shift, and it's kind of what you'd hope that they all, the point of view that they all came to, but it's really pretty rare.
A remarkably big story writ small. Thank you so much for joining us, Mike.
Oh, glad to be here. Thank you.
Mike Pride is editor emeritus of the Concord Monitor and the author of Our War, Days and Events in the Fight for the Union. You'll find a link to an article about it and more on the book at wordofmouthradio.org. And we also invite you to post your thoughts or observations on this or anything you hear. You can do that at our Facebook page, Word of Mouth Radio, or on Twitter, at Word of Mouth. Stay with us for Love and Robots. We'll have that story when Word of Mouth continues.